Welcome to the Social Connection Podcast. Each week, you'll hear actionable tips on social media marketing, interviews with entrepreneurs, and business tips. My name is Atish Palmer from Metric Connect Digital Marketing. Thank you for your time with me today, and enjoy the next podcast. Hi, and welcome everyone to the Social Connection Podcast. This week, we have a special guest from the US, Neil Schaefer. He is a social media marketing expert, a speaker, a social media consultant. He has his own agency and a podcast, and I wanted to bring him on because I've been following Neil for a few months now, and I feel that his message is good for B2B businesses, and there's a lot to learn from Neil's marketing experience. So Neil, thank you very much for joining me on this episode, and introduce yourself to our listeners and give them a bit of an intro on what you're all about.
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me. I'm honored by those words and the way you introduced me. So my name is Neil Schaefer, and I am a digital marketing author, consultant, speaker. Helped a lot of companies. I've spoken at a lot of events. I've been doing this for literally more than a decade now. So my name is sort of out there. I try to provide content to really help businesses and to help professionals, whether or not they're my customers. So I have a blog, neilschaefer.com, that has, you know, over 400 blog posts, and I have guest bloggers, what have you. I have a podcast, the Maximize Your Social Influence podcast. I'm active on social media, and I've also written a few books. My first two books were about LinkedIn. I wrote a third book called Maximize Your Social, really about building a social media marketing strategy and measuring social media marketing ROI. And most recently, I wrote a book on influencer marketing called The Age of Influence, which really redefines the concept to make it believable and real for really any business in any industry.
Okay, brilliant. So we're going to touch base at the end with about your book, but it's more to the case where you're giving insights to people, getting their brand out there, making sure the influencer side of social media is where some of the core points are to expose on all the platforms, I presume.
Yeah, you know, I think if you take a step back, and I say digital, but obviously my strength and my specialty has really been in social, but social is a part of digital, right? So, Yeah. You know, what are the different things you can do today, especially in the age of coronavirus? How do you engage? How do you get business from a digital consumer? So, or a digital buyer? So obviously you have a website, right? You want to have content in your website for SEO, and you could do pay-per-click as well. So you have this organic paid. You have email marketing, marketing automation, because you don't own anything that appears in a Google search. It could go away tomorrow. Anything in social media could go away tomorrow. So you need to have your own asset, which obviously is email marketing, marketing automation. You have a lot of different types of content marketing that we could talk about. And then you have the social media, which is organic or paid. And the challenge is that organic social media has become pay to play for businesses. I can pretty much say it as is, like that, for most businesses. And an advertisement in social media sort of defeats the purpose of, you know, social media was supposed to be about this sort of viral word of mouth marketing, which doesn't really happen from an ad, does it? Plus, people don't really trust ads the way they used to. On the other hand, algorithms favor people. And we just, you know, we like content that relates to us, that we find real, authentic. And the people that are making that sort of content or publishing that sort of content are content creators that are building communities. And these are what we would call influencers. And therefore, the role of influencer marketing becomes more and more important if your brand wants to be heard in social media, which is getting harder and harder to do with every day.
Because there's so many people doing the same thing. What would be your take on, right, everybody wants to be viral, regardless of organic or paid advertising, but what's your take on the core values one post should have to make sure there's maximum exposure rather than posting whatever's out there? Where do people need to vision themselves when they're scheduling their posts or having that day of creativity and finding, right, this one's going to be the one? What would be your take on taking, let's narrow down a bit more and go down to a visual post on Instagram?
Yeah, well, I think it begins with the fact that hopefully you're not just on Instagram, right? So you have a strategy, and within the strategy you have the content. So what are you going to talk about on Instagram that is, number one, going to be engaging with your audience, but number two, is also going to help build brand awareness for your business or your products. Yep. And that balance is really tricky on Instagram, because anything that looks like an ad, a lot of businesses publish content about their products that literally look like ads, right? Yeah. And they get very bad engagement and people just don't care. So it really defeats the purpose. I think, you know, we get back to something I've been saying for a while, which is social media is made for people, not for businesses. So we need to be on a human level and we need to publish content that humans would actually engage with. So invariably, you know, if this was like a LinkedIn or a Twitter, that sort of lifestyle content may not be as important. You can get away with a lot of more professional content or product-centered content, because that's what people are interested in there. But when we talk about the visual world, it's very, very different. So, you know, Instagram has a 9-grid system. When you look at someone's Instagram, normally you see, you know, the first 3 or 6 or 9 photos.
Yeah.
So can we divide our content into from 1 to 9 content buckets, right, is the way that I would refer them, or content categories. So for instance, you know, I have experimented with different things over time. Now, I'm a person, not a business, but I don't talk a lot about social media on my personal Instagram account, because I know that that's not what everybody's interested in hearing all the time. If they want to learn social media, they'll go to Twitter, they'll go to LinkedIn. So on Instagram, I'd say 1/3 of my content is more about travel, because before COVID, I used to do a lot of business travel, speaking, what have you.
Yeah.
1/3 of it is about food, because when I traveled, I would often eat, you know, interesting things that people really resonated with. And 1/3 of it is more about business. And that's very, very broad, but maybe me speaking, you know, notification of an upcoming conference, information of my new book or a new lead magnet. So, but I leave that to 1/3. Yeah. Right. That's not 2/3, or it's not.
And you're trying to give what your current followers in that platform want to be listening to.
Exactly. And that's the key thing, is that you know, businesses start with this content strategy, but every platform is different. And the followers you build in every platform are going to be different as well. And by looking at your analytics, right? I mean, this is the key thing. When you started saying, you know, what is that one piece of content that's going to go viral? I think if you ask a lot of influencers, and even if you ask me, the things that we think are going to be more popular aren't.
They're not,
and the things we don't think will go, but actually, like, you know, I made a commitment very early on my Instagram that I'm not going to do quote posts. I thought that quote posts were sort of like a commodity, right? Now, a lot of people do them. A lot of people are successful. But I did a quote post with Black Lives Matter Martin Luther King, because I thought, and I wanted to say something, right?
Yeah.
And that has been one of my top 10 performing posts. And it was a quote post, the post I said I would never do, that I didn't think my audience would engage with. And they did. And it actually went, you know, fairly viral, considering the number of followers I have and the amount of people that saw it from hashtag. So you can't really predict it, but you can look back at you can do one thing, right? You experiment with different types of visuals, different type of content. And then you look at your analytics and you see what performs or not. And you go from there, and there's no other way to do it. When you find something that performs well, obviously do more of that, right? But if you're not also experimenting with new things, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, going back to our reporting system, we use Agora Pulse. And what we found with our clients is not just hashtag strategies or what days, what times, but the type of content and using the analytics for month 2 and 3 after looking at one, our following, our engagement and reach is always much more better, because we're not doing the guessing game. It's actually, we're using numbers and then going double downing on the other side of content. So I'm 100% with you on how, when it comes to analytics, but there's a lot of people when they're saying, right, I want to do social media myself, and there's so much to take in. So there's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube. What's your take on, I'm a firm believer on, you should be on all the platforms, but say if you're a small business and you are not in the position to pay £1,000 or £2,000 a month, what's your take on, should they just divert all the attention to 1 and 2, or keep going and then, you know, don't get dragged down when they can't see any monetization of one of the social media aspect to it? What's your take on that?
Yeah, my agency has worked with businesses that had, like, you know, 10 social media icons on their website. It's like, hold on here. What are we doing here, right? Because go into your Google Analytics, right? What's driving traffic? Whether it's B2B or your e-commerce, at the end of the day, you're trying to bring people back to your website to convert, right?
Yeah.
In any way. So what is doing that? And that is the first thing to look at when you look at, you know, what social network should you be on? Obviously, where is your target audience? Probably. So if it's a millennial demographic and you're a B2C company, they should be on Instagram. If you're not performing well on Instagram, you need to figure that out. But I literally start with one or two. I prefer two social networks because then you can do A/B testing and find what works and what doesn't work. But you don't need to, you know, I do this for a living, right? But it's not even easy for me to maintain a robust presence. Instagram, I don't post every day. I'd love to publish every day. Maybe it's once or twice a week. YouTube is something I've been wanting to do for years, and I have a few hundred subscribers, but I haven't really had a strategic approach to it. So, you know, there's something to be said for pick a content medium, right? So you have audio, you have text, you have photo, you have video. And often that's going to define the best social network for you. Because if you can't continue doing it on your own, if you're not passionate, if you don't enjoy being there, it's not going to last. No. Right? And it's also going to show in your content. So if you're an avid podcast listener, go with podcasts, right? Sure, start a Facebook or Instagram account for the podcast, but let that be your major driver. If you're in a video, then YouTube's a no-brainer, and then repurpose that on Instagram or LinkedIn, depending on, you know, your target audience. So I think a combination of those things will sort of give you the answer.
And then working out the best way, which one's working for you, then concentrate more on those, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned Google Analytics, but not everything pops up there either, right?
No.
There are notions of where are you building a bigger community, where are you getting more engagement. You know, engagement on podcast is obviously a subscriber and a downloader. On YouTube, it's a viewer. How long were they engaging? You know, versus an IGTV versus a LinkedIn video. So it's sort of all over the place. So there is additional information to take in terms of your potential. I mean, you could build a big community and not get them to go over to your website because you didn't have a call to action or offer them something at your website at the end of your podcast, for instance, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of little tricks that obviously agency owners know how to do to optimize that. But those are definitely the things you should be thinking about at the beginning.
Okay, cool. And we touched on the base where you, and I seen one of your podcasts where you were speaking about the personality needs to show in a business. What's your take on a newbie or someone that's on any social media platform, but then they want to become an influencer within their niche, their field, in their geographic location? How would you go about, we all know it's not just a quick click of the finger and it's going to happen, but what do they need to do to get out there? My take is, and a lot of my IG lives and my podcast, one of the main things I say to people is, make sure your face is out there and you're doing videos and exploding it that way. But what's your take on someone small trying to become a influencer within their field?
So I think that, you know, my definition of influencers are content creators that have built communities, right? Yeah. So the key thing here is the content creation. If you're not publishing content, you're not going to be able to yield influence. And with every piece of content, especially if it's in your industry or location, obviously, there's various sorts of tagging that you can do, including hashtag, that you need to leverage to the maximum. And, you know, number one, are you doing that? Number two is, are you following people in your industry that might be interested in hearing from you? And then, you know, the third one is, are you engaging with people in your industry, including your followers, right? Because the only way to get them to know you is to tap on their shoulder digitally and say, hey, I'm here. I love your content. Or, hey, you know, I thought this was great. The next step is to try to include those people in your content. So there's something to be said for leveraging user-generated content from people that you're trying to target as part of your own content, or, you know, an Instagram live interview is one example. So, you know, videos are really interesting. Instagram stories are interesting. IGTV is interesting. Instagram Reels is interesting. There's a lot of different sort of content mediums you have. If you're comfortable doing videos, go for it. If you're not comfortable doing videos, I don't think you necessarily have to do really well. A lot of people say Instagram stories is where the engagement is. I get more engagement on my posts than I do on Instagram stories, without a doubt. So it's not the same. Yeah, it's not the same for everybody. I experimented with Instagram Reels. It didn't really do that much different than TikTok. A normal post for me, right? Okay. So, and it's a lot harder to make it, I guess they're discoverable in general, but, you know, adding hashtags and things like that is a little bit counterintuitive. So, you know, I think that people look for the hacks that try to help them build influence really fast, but it takes time to get to know, like, and trust other people. So, you know, stick with your content, but always trying to bring more people into your content while you engage. I think it's a mixture of those things. And that's looking at the analytics, if videos way outperform photos, then awesome, right? But I don't know how many people are really exploding their followers over stories versus posts. I mean, I still get engagement on posts that I published like a year or two ago that have done really well with hashtags, right? I don't think that happens with stories, obviously. I mean, they disappear in 24 hours. And while I have gotten some exposure from hashtags, it really pales in comparison to posts. So really, you know, take a look at all that data, and that will be your best guide as to where you should be focusing your time and energy.
Yeah, and it's more of a long game rather than finding out, okay, oh, this month it didn't work and I'm not doing this again. But it's creating content, being in their face, but not in a bad way, but engaging with them. But the content has to be engaging. If you're not engaging and DMing, you're getting DMs, then it's not working. But yeah, the long game is definitely the key, I presume. You were speaking about Instagram Reels. Have you how active are you on TikTok?
Not active at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not very active at all, and I kind of thought a positive thing for Instagram Reels was that okay, there's one. Well, everybody's comparing Instagram Reels with TikTok, and my personal take was great. If they do a better job with that, then TikTok's out of the equation. But I'm not sure where TikTok is going to be in the next 6 months. It's massive. I don't think Instagram have the capability just to take it away. But what's your view on it?
Yeah, you know, I see a very, very close analogy with Snapchat.
Yeah.
So Snapchat used to have something like stories, which really, you know, began it all.
Yeah.
And then Instagram obviously copied it, like every social network copies each other.
Yeah.
And it's evolved into something very different than it was originally intended to be when it was on Snapchat. So I do believe that, though, there are kids who want to avoid being on platforms where their parents are for obvious reasons, and their parents are on Instagram now. So they want to have that second social network that's theirs, or have multiple Instagram accounts, whatever it is. But, you know, Snapchat has always served that sort of young teenage demographic and continues to do so. And that's exact same demographic where TikTok began and exploded from. So I believe that, you know, with Instagram Reels, it's going to obviously commoditize that sort of product, and more people that are not teenagers will start to use those musical videos, just like people that weren't teenagers began to use stories, right?
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, so TikTok, I think, is going to eat away more of Snapchat's audience than Instagram's audience. Now, there will always be people that really love music, really love dancing, really love videos. For them, TikTok, that's awesome, right? But, you know, when I look at my own social media and when I look at for the clients that I work for, I don't have any that are really targeting that teenage demographic.
Yeah.
So therefore, TikTok, I don't care what people talk about. I mean, I remember people saying, a pretty famous marketing author saying, you know, the future of B2B social media is Snapchat, right? And I'm like, are you kidding me, right? It's if people aren't using it in that way, or if those people aren't using it, it's not going to happen. And you can't evangelize to make it happen. So I avoid, there's so much noise about TikTok. I let other people experiment with it, waste their time on it. If and when it comes to a broader audience, it's probably going to look a little bit different. And it's never too late. I mean, you could start an Instagram account today and still do very well a year from now, right?
Yeah.
So I don't freak out about it. I don't think, you know, there's no FOMO when it comes to this, because even with people saying Facebook is dying, Facebook is still very much alive and well. The audience there is still very engaging. So let everybody run to all these other social networks. I focus on where the real people are and where they're going to continue to be.
And I think during our both of us talking at the minute, everything excels down to what's your followers, what do they like, give them what they like, and then your following will always grow. So yeah, there's two paths going into one. So the main things are get analytics, make sure content is good and it's key, but you don't make sure the 2 to 3 core social platforms you're working on are working for you, and then you're not wearing yourself too thin when you're on every single social media platform.
Yeah. You know, it's not, from my perspective, it's not about building a following. It's about building influence. When you talk, people listen. And in order to do that, you need to have the right followers and the right content. And invariably, if you're a newcomer and nobody knows you, you got to reach out to get to know people. Yeah. Otherwise, none of this works. So it's a combination of the content, the followers, and that engagement.
Okay. I wanted to go back to the more generic digital marketing side of things. Now, when I am talking to majority of the businesses I propose to, the first question I ask them is, how's your data? Or how big's your data list, your email list? And most of them say, yeah, it's okay. And then when you look deep down, it's not good, or they've not replenished it for a number of months and there's emails there for no reason. What's your take on businesses not having the right data? Because like you said, everything needs to go back to your website. And if your data is not great, what's the point actually spending money on paid ads when you're not doing it? And I just wanted to hear your take on it, because I know what I feel about people not building lists.
Well, and you know, it's sort of the same thing about influencer marketing, is that you have most people think that it's a scam.
Yeah.
And then you have a small percentage of people that love it and just spend a lot of money without necessarily measuring it, right? So there's a lot of companies out there, and you know them, I know them. They do a great sale and they think they're doing the best thing, but they're really not following best practices in what you and I know of today in digital and social media marketing.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of companies have wasted, I mean, you know, probably in our careers, we've also wasted money at some point because we didn't know what to do, or we work with the wrong people or wrong companies. It's a natural process.
Yeah.
So if you haven't worked with, you know, a true expert, then you might have this, you know, well, we can't change our website. Every time we need to change our website, we need to reach out to someone and change it. Well, there's a problem, right? Or, you know, well, we don't have access to web analytics. Another problem. We don't know why we have these people on our list, or we have a list, but we don't know what to do with it, right? So there's all these different layers that all relate to working with the wrong partner to begin with, because it should not be a black box. You shouldn't have to pay money to have one line of Google Analytics code installed on the website to give you access. You may need to pay for training if you don't know how to read the data. But yeah, I mean, if you have no data, how do you report back? I mean, how do you rationalize how much you spend on this, right? I'm just thinking from, if I'm a VP of marketing and I report back to the CEO, the data is everything.
Yeah.
If I'm a business owner and you're not very data-centric, it's going to come down to feeling and more anecdotal. That, oh, we spent a lot, we seem to have gotten a lot of sales, we'll keep spending a lot. And you waste a lot of money and you miss out on opportunities when you do that. So you should absolutely, everything you do has to be data-driven. And we spoke about that earlier. And the email list is an interesting one. Because with COVID-19, you know, if you're a retailer, I mean, or if you're B2B, how do you communicate with people now? It's all virtual. And email becomes key, because you can't necessarily rely on Google to serve up a result, or you can't rely on everybody to see every post you do on social media. But email, you can rely on that. You do have the ability to get into people's inboxes. Not everybody's going to read it, but you have a chance. So I think that there's a natural thing that companies need to do, is when people come to your website, you have a way of converting them into becoming an email subscriber, or even from social media, right? And building that up, but also offering them something for doing so and offering them value on a repeated basis. And on the flip side, if you don't have much engagement from your email list, the ISPs like Google will see it as spam when you send an email out, if you get reported as spam or if nobody opens it or clicks. So part of the process also, especially with email, I think, is churn, is making sure that you actually unsubscribe people if they haven't been engaging for a while. And this is something that I know that most big companies do. I don't know how many small businesses do. I personally, and for my clients, use ActiveCampaign, which has a marketing automation feature. And there's a few other, you know, nice providers of that have it. But I know that 90 days in, if they have not opened or clicked any email and they have not visited my website after being cookied, that they're going to get an email saying, hey, in 1 week, we're going to delete you from our list. Or if you click here, we can maintain you on the list. So I know that after 90 days, I'm automatically or automagically pruning that list. So then you get to the point where, you know, I've maxed out a list at 25,000, which is currently at 10,000, because that's how much excess there was in it over the years. I mean, people that subscribed 3-4 years
weren't really engaging.
So, and that, it's not about the size, it's about the engagement. Yeah. Same thing goes with social media followings. I will block people you know, on Instagram that, you know, they haven't been active in 5 years, right?
Yeah.
They're hurting the algorithm, right? They're hurting the reach of my content. So it's the same concept. I do this with LinkedIn connections as well. When they're irrelevant, right? Maybe I connected with them a decade ago when I was looking for a job, but you know, connecting with them now has no meaning for either party. So then you begin to sort of rethink your whole approach to all this. It's not about the number of people the email went out to. It's about open rates. It's about click-through rates. And at the end of the day, it's obviously about conversions. It's about looking at your Google Analytics and looking at your conversion amounts and saying, wow, you know, email is up there with organic search, which is up there with, you know, a campaign or Instagram. Or then you begin to figure out how to strategically and intelligently invest resources to get the maximum ROI. And I believe that most business owners are just not ready for this conversation. They're just not there with their marketing, which is why they should be hiring, you know, someone like you to do it for them. But that's the sort of thought process and education you need to have. You need to work with a partner that has that, but it's not a black box. The partner is sharing that data with you, showing you how to read the data, and then going hand in hand from there.
Yeah. And just touching back on what you said about massive followers, but what's the point in having 100,000 followers when only 200 people are watching you or something like that, or people paying for followers just to make sure they look like they're an influencer? But I always say, yep, the deep down fundamentals are probably wrong within the business if they're thinking that state, they have that state of mind. But yeah, the smaller, to be fair, you'd rather have 100 people to talk to if they're all paying you a decent amount of money. And I think, to be fair, when we get a discussion and people are just about to join us, and the main thing is, we want to increase our following to 1,000, and we wanted to get the swipe up and stuff. But yeah, you're 100% right. They need that marketing person to kind of say, hey, hold up. This is how you monetize digital marketing. And if you understand it, it's going to work well.
Yeah, the conversation should be, we want to get 100 hits to our website from social. How do we do it?
Yeah.
And what the cost is going to be. Because you could do it from Google as well, right? Pay-per-click ads.
Yeah.
And that's, it's not about number of followers. It's all about getting the right people to do the right action. So hopefully people listening will sort of correct themselves. And I know it feels good to have a lot of followers. It looks good. If you're trying to become an influencer who at 10,000 followers gets a swipe up and maybe gets paid $50 to $75 to post something on behalf of a brand, if that's going to pay your bills and build a business, awesome. But that's a side hustle, right? Yeah. You're a business owner. So you're going to waste a lot of time and effort in something that is not going to be very financial rewarding. And there's a lot of other people doing that you're going to be competing with.
Cool. How have you found networking during COVID then? So I've pushed, well, throughout this lockdown for us in the UK, we've started this podcast, and I've personally done more Instagram lives, and I miss the physical networking side of things. But what's changed for you in lockdown? Because I presume you're a master of networking when it comes to social media and digital marketing.
Yeah, I'm a very much an in-person person, right?
Yeah.
When I work with my clients, I have a lot of local clients here in Southern California. So a lot of in-person meetings, speak at conferences, what have you. So it sucks, but you know, I published a new book on March 17th. Literally 2 days later, California goes on lockdown.
Okay.
So, you know, for me, it's always been no excuses, make the most of what you have. And what we do have is we have people that are online all the time. So it's actually, I believe, given us a lot of opportunity to network and to develop relationships, which I've invested a lot into. And it's also given us time, just like you started a podcast, anybody in digital marketing that, you know, travels and does speaking, what have you, we now have a lot of time where we can invest in our content.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm like you, I've been really consistently blogging once a week, podcasting once a week, and I'm getting closer to where I can actually start my own YouTube channel and delivering video once a week. I'm not there yet. But it's, to me, it's been a godsend in a weird way that I've been able to, you know, really double down on content and relationships. And I challenge myself to actually be on 100 podcasts 6 months after the publication of my book. And therefore, I've been actively networking because I believe that podcasters are content creators and influencers in their own outright. And it's led to, just the other day, I was a guest and the podcast host ended up hiring me. Literally like a few days after our podcast episode. It hasn't even aired yet. And the unintended consequences, I was merely doing it to share the knowledge and network. Right. I think there's no excuses in any business listening to this or any person. You can pivot and you can really flourish if you get how to do it right. And networking comes down to give and take, right? Are you helping other people? Why should they want to talk to you? I get people that reach out to me all the time, but if I don't see what's in it for me, yes, I know that you want to be on my podcast, but the topic is irrelevant, right? It's something I'm not interested in. I don't know how many listening or if you've heard of an author named Marie Kondo. So she's, I my wife is Japanese and I spend time in Japan. So she's a Japanese living in New York now. And she writes books about, the art of being tidy and the art of like cleaning your house. And she says every time you clean your house, you should look at every object in either one of two ways. Does it give you joy or not?
Yeah.
So I've actually been taking that approach to my business, because if people reach out and it doesn't give me joy, I don't want to have anything to do with it. It's going to take me down, right? And so that's what's in it for me, right? If you pitch me in an interesting and engaging way, but if it's just a cut and paste that you're sending everybody, I have no interest. So there's a right way to do digital networking and there's a wrong way. The wrong way is the spray and pray. The right way is to individually align yourself with people that you think you're going to get along well with, and you think that they're going to like what you have to say, and you go from there.
So I passed the test then with you.
Indeed you did, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much. Going back to, we had a podcast. My wife did a podcast on decluttering, and the reason.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And it bodes well with it, because the reason why we did it was she's a firm believer on have it clean, have the vision correct, and the path is always going to be right. And we take that approach on our business. Although it can, times can get busy and stuff, but yeah, I really like that aspect of how you put it on what's in it for me, not in a selfish way, but in a more proactive approach. And yeah, I mean, I get some people that want to come on something, and I do think, right, this is one way. It needs to be two way. And then you think, right, if I'm feeling that and I think that, it probably is right. I've gone to that stage now. I'm not self-doubting some things. And I think it gets easier that way when you're thinking like that. So yeah, I'm 100% on that.
To be fair, you also reached out to me without knowing that I was on this mission to be on a lot of podcasts, because I had written a book. So there's also timing. If you had reached out to me a year ago when I was still writing the book, I might not have even responded.
True.
So there are different phases that people are in, but here's the thing. People are busy. They're busy with life. And if you are a content creator like myself, you get pinged by a lot of people that want a lot of different things from you, right?
Yeah.
So, if you want to reach out to others and network, you need to understand that and be a little bit more savvier if you want to get good results.
Brilliant. I wanted you to inform my listeners of your new book, An Age of Influence. Who is your target for that book, and why would purchasing that book be beneficial for them?
Yeah. So I have always written books, as an extension of serving my community. I started getting asked 2 or 3 years ago a lot of questions, not just about influencer marketing, but about people wanting to become more influential themselves. So I had, written books before based on things that everybody had asked me, and seeing that there was such interest, I began to do a little bit of research. So when I began to do the research and looked at case studies and interviewing people, I realized that there was a need for a book on the subject, because I felt that everybody was getting it wrong. Everybody was being misled. So really, I am not teaching you how to become an influencer. It's not what the book is about. There are other books that do that. There are programs. This is all about how you as a business can leverage influencer marketing as a major marketing channel. And it really goes into the why, the how, the what's next, and everything you want to do about that. Now, at the end of the book, I do get into this concept that, every business should become more influential. Because the more influential your business is online, the more other influencers want to work with you, right? So if you're reaching out to someone and you have 100 followers versus you reach out to someone, you have 10,000 followers, if they have never heard of you, they're going to perceive of you very different, right? Just looking at that number. And I'm not saying you want to buy fake followers to get there. That's not the intention. But you want to try to yielding more influence makes it easier for you to work with influencers. And, you know, people listening to us may think, wow, I'd love to have everybody hitting up my brand for podcast interview requests. And you will get there if you become more influential. And then there's another chapter after that says, okay, you know, if you're reading this, you're a marketer, you may want to become an influencer yourself. So you could reverse engineer the process and figure out how to become more influential. But it's really for business owners, entrepreneurs, marketers that are looking for, you know, how do I get better ROI, especially from social media marketing spend or paid social media marketing spend, or have started or don't know what to do with influencers, maybe have started, don't see the ROI, don't know if they're doing it right. That's really the value, because I do believe after reading that book, you'll see why that influencer marketing really should be a separate line item on your budget and how it's probably going to outperform your organic social media and your paid social media for your business.
Brilliant. And where can they find, well, where can they purchase the book from?
Yeah. So The Age of Influence is available at every, you know, every bookseller. It was published through HarperCollins Leadership. They're one of the biggest business book publishers. HarperCollins published Gary Vaynerchuk's book. So it's, you know, it's available. I mean, they even sent me, let's see here. They even have it available as MP3 audio, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And you can even buy it as an audio CD in addition to the Audible version. So any format you can think of, brilliant, it's available in.
Brilliant. This has been great. I think a lot of people can take so much out of this this episode. And I really thank you for coming on. A question I always ask my guest is when we're finishing off the episode is, where do you see yourself personally and in business in the next 5 years?
Well, that's a really great question. So I have actually been doing, from my business side, I've actually been getting a lot of business from being what I call a fractional CMO. So a fractional CMO is basically working as their chief marketing officer on behalf of businesses for, you know, 1 to 8 hours a week. And I've actually picked up a lot of new business since COVID-19 doing this for different businesses in different industries. And I sort of love this, that consultancy type of role rather than the agency role, believe it or not. So I've actually been shifting more into that. So I see that continuing, and I'm charging more and more. And I hope to work with more and more innovative companies doing exciting things. That's where I keep skin in the game, right? And if you're not doing it, you can't be talking about it. You can't be teaching others. And that's where I get my insight, my own innovation. Yeah. So I look to be doing more of that. For the other days of the week where I'm not doing that, I'm looking to I've yet to launch a digital product or a digital community. So I am looking to launch that. And I'm hoping that, you know, a combination of that will give me more time to, I actually want to continue writing more books. I already have the concept for my next book, which I'd like to start writing, hopefully Q3. Well, probably be more like Q4. So I guess over the next 5 years, I'd like to, you know, continue on that path of that fractional CMO, of, you know, launching that digital community / products, continuing to write, and just continuing to do what I do, but hopefully on a larger scale. Hopefully we'll be all be able to travel soon, and I'll be able to speak more. And that for me to, you know, literally work 2 or 3 days a week, and then spend the rest of the time doing the things I love to do and serving the greater community. I don't consider myself like a Robin Hood, but I've always thought, you know, I don't want to make money off people and small businesses. Those companies that pay for me, I learn a lot, and I share what I learn with everybody else, right?
Brilliant.
And I've always sort of had that approach. So that's sort of what I'd like to continue doing on a larger scale. Yes, asking for a little bit of money for the community of digital products, but just being able to help and serve more people. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to scale that over the next year or two and go from there.
I'll be watching your journey through it, and hopefully our paths cross again. You're in the OC, right?
I am.
I was in Newport Beach in 2005 for 6 months. So I'm a bit jealous that we're getting the weather of what we got here, and you've got amazing OC to watch. where can my, finally, thank you very much, and I really, really appreciate it. So for my followers, I actually DM Neil to feature on my podcast, and I tagged him actually, and he sent me a reply straight away, and it was so easy to deal with. And for someone like myself who's just started, well, I'm a year into it, but it I give you a lot of credit for getting a small guy like me onto bringing you onto my platform, and really, really thank you very much. I hope my listeners have got a lot of golden nuggets from this. And to just finish it off, where can my followers find you on?
So I am Neil Schaefer everywhere on social media. My URL is neilschaefer.com. So it's the real Neil, N-E-A-L. Don't be the Starbucks barista that tries to spell it N-I-E-L or, man, N-Y-A-L-L. Yeah, so it's N-E-A-L. Yeah. And then there's a few of us Schaefers out there in marketing. So it's S-C-H-A-F-F-E-R. I also have a podcast called the Maximize Your Social Influence Podcast, if you're interested in delving deeper into this concept of digital influence. And then obviously the name of my book is The Age of Influence.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Neil. And yeah, thank you again. Thank you for a great podcast.
Thank you, my friend. We'll keep in touch. I look forward to seeing yours and your agency's growth as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you.